I'm too sexy for my shirt. Too sexy for my shirt. So sexy it hurts.
Oh my.
I'd like to welcome you, and especially you to this episode of Infotainment, my 63rd episode, which is unbelievable to me. And this is the last stop podcast shop on your FM dial. Well, dear listener, let's stop, drop, and roll right into the program. Yes, it is Super Bowl Sunday, but I have like zippo interest in watching it, except for maybe a few commercials. Since the Minnesota Vikings with a Q choked it up yet again, against Philadelphia. It's probably just as well, because Tom Brady and company would have drubbed us probably even worse than Philly did. But I did find something interesting to me anyway, and it is the 25 Super Bowl halftime shows ranked. 25 of them ranked, from the Black Eyed Peas to U2. And at number 25, the worst to first, 2011. Before this show, youngins were celebrating the end of the halftime show being owned by the retirement home. Afterwards, the old folks were smugly smirking. The Peas were absolutely abdominal, with stiff choreography and mailed-in vocals that made the Who seem 40 years younger. The absolute worst moment came when Slash arrived to save the day, only for Fergie to commit a cardinal sin against rock by mangling Sweet Child of Mine. Later in 2011, the Peas' new album got panned, their motion sensor video game bombed, and by the year's end, they announced they were going on hiatus. In 95, they did something pay homage to Indiana Jones. I don't remember this one at all. If you thought Katy Perry's Shark was weird, get a load of this. Disney used this halftime show to promote its new Indiana Jones ride at Disneyland, and that featured Indy, not played by Harrison Ford, trying to steal a plastic Vince Lombardi trophy from a temple. Throw in a lip-syncing Patti LaBelle and Tony Bennett, and you have a real stinker. And next we have The Who I really liked for a time, until Townsend kind of went off his rocker and made a statement one time. He goes, from now on, call me Loretta, and then other things. But let's make, this was in 2010, The Who. Let's make something clear. The Who are absolute legends, which they are. They are essentially not just to rock and roll, but to all of music. But unlike previous classic rock acts, Roger Daltrey and Pete Townsend really felt past their prime in this performance. And that's the worst thing you can do at a show like this. Some have speculated that since Roger and Pete had never seen an American football game before, they may not have realized just how big this gig was in American culture. I find that hard to believe, that they hadn't watched one game or something like that. I mean, they played stadiums. I mean, what's the big difference? And then we have at number 22 in 1997, we have James Brown, ZZ Top, and the Blues Brothers. I think ZZ Top on by itself could still rock it out. But another lineup that seemed great on paper and disappointing in reality, the Godfather of Soul was forced to blatantly lip-sync his greatest hits, and Jim Belushi cavorted around the stage doing a weak imitation of his brothers, John Belushi, his iconic role. Yeah, John Belushi, he did that great. But they don't say much about ZZ Top. They must have done okay on that. At 21st, we have Phil Collins, Enrique Iglesias, and Christina Aguilera. And that was in 2000. Wow, look at that lineup. All right, that should be a smash show, but it ended up being a Disney-produced bore about the tapestry of nations. Instead of thumping out Genesis songs, Collins got stuck doing one of the songs he wrote for Tarzan. Iglesias and Aguilera did a duet called Celebrate the Future Hand in Hand, Amazingly, Xtina would go on to hit a bigger low at the Super Bowl when she flubbed the national anthem a decade later. And we got, boy, how could Shania Twain screw up anything? Shania Twain, No Doubt, and Sting. That's when you get in troubles, when you bring other people out and it F's it up, you know? This one is just forgettable, particularly since after the game, Bon Jovi stole the spotlight by singing It's My Life just before the Tampa Bay Buccaneers were awarded the trophy. Gwen Stefani teamed up with Sting to do Message in a Bottle. Almost saved this show. Almost. Why didn't just not let Shania Twain do the whole halftime show? Probably would have rated higher, you know? Clint Black, Tanya Tucker, Travis Tritt, and the Judds. I do not remember this at all. This was in 94. Tapped country music stars for an ultimate unmemorable rock and country Sunday halftime show. Clint Black, Tanya Tucker, Travis Tritt, and Winona Judd all performed a few of their hits, with Naomi Judd joining her daughter on stage for the finale, Love Can Build a Bridge. I remember that was a pretty popular song in its day. At number 18, we're getting better, supposedly. I haven't seen a lot of these, so I wouldn't know. I did see Nipplegate, I guess. We'll talk about that in a minute. Gloria Estefan, Stevie Wonder, Big Bad Voodoo Daddy, and Savion Glover, 1999. People would say I'm a little behind the times. I can't believe that's true. You know, the only rap song I really liked was by Tone Loc. Forget the title of it. But you know how far back that went. Oh yeah, Wild Thing. So I don't spend much time listening to hip hop or rap. Let's get back to our countdown. Oh, here we are. It's Gloria Estefan, Stevie Wonder, Big Bad Voodoo Daddy, and Savion Glover in 1999. The seemingly random lineup of Estefan, Wonder, and swing revivalist Big Bad Voodoo Daddy combined to make 1999's halftime show a high-energy affair. There was a cameo by E.T. the Extraterrestrial to help stump for progressive auto insurance. Was Flo riding her? I wonder in real life if she would look anything like the Flo we see in the commercials. Or she's so made up that no one would recognize her at all. And Progressive sponsored the show. And at 17, we have Boyz II Men, Smokey Robinson's, Martha Reeves. Martha Reeves? Who would that? The Temptations, 1998, in celebration of Motown's 40th anniversary, Boyz II Men led the Super Bowl halftime show with assists from legends like Smokey Robinson, Martha Reeves, and The Temptation. The 40 years of age came through in this one, though. While it's a fun set, it ultimately does not strike too lasting a chord. Number 16, we got probably the most iconic rock and roll group ever. People said that Keith Richards was going to be dead like 40, 50 years ago. He's still hanging on. And then this was in 2006. Mick Jagger and the Rolling Stones took a break from their world tour, supporting their 24th studio album, A Bigger Bang. In 2006, to perform at a halftime show for Super Bowl, the Stones turned in a lot of energy, but the NFL snipped a few of Mick's racier lyrics in the pre-recorded tape, leaving Mick a bit miffed. Well, you don't want to miff Mick Jagger at all. Next, we have Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. Maybe should have, well, may he rest in peace. Should have had Stevie Nicks up there, too, doing Stop Dragging My Heart Around. Would have been a good number for the Super Bowl. More concerned with performance than spectacle, Tom Petty opened the Super Bowl halftime show with crowd favorites, American Girl and I Won't Back Down. Petty's performance didn't blow any doors off, but it nailed all the hits and gave everyone a solid show. At number 14, we got Lady Gaga. I know she's pretty flamboyant in her dress, but I haven't heard a song by her, I don't think. Gaga kicked it off by jumping off the roof of Reliance Stadium, which was incredibly awesome. Everything that came after, by comparison, seemed rather mundane, with no guest artists or anything particularly surprising happening. It was a solid Lady Gaga show, to be sure. But for the Super Bowl, we need something more. Well, I don't know. You know, you get too many superstars together, and sometimes it works just for one superstar to do something like that. 13, we have Bruno Mars, which I've heard of, but I haven't heard any songs, I don't think. The Red Hot Chili Peppers, of course. 2014, following Beyonce. Beyonce. I think I crossed the tracks for her and not look back. At the Super Bowl must have been a daunting prospect, but Bruno Mars still managed to put on a good show with a little help from the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Unfortunately, it came out later that the band wasn't actually playing its own instruments, which marred the whole show a bit. Interesting. Then we have Madonna, LMFAO. Nicki Minaj, MIA, CeeLo Green, 2012. Madonna's halftime show wound up a bit chaotic. It featured a slew of guests, including Nicki Minaj, CeeLo Green, and went all in on being an over-the-top spectacle. Yeah, I think she got pretty praised for that because of being as old as she is and doing some of the shit she did for that halftime show. Through it all, the most memorable moment may have been MIA flipping the bird on live TV. NFL sued over the move, in fact, but wound up settling. And number 11, and here we have Nipplegate, Janet Jackson and Justin Timberlake, 2004. Yes, maybe this isn't the best, but it was definitely among the most memorable. Janet and Justin were doing a rendition of Rock Your Baby, Rock Your Body. body that was absolutely smoking, until the smoke turned into a PTC wildfire. In hindsight, the wardrobe malfunction might have saved the show. Does anyone even remember that? I do. I thought she had a pasty, and I thought that's the way it... I didn't really realize that totally... She must have been wearing, like, saran wrap strength bra on that. And I guess the Jackson family is really mad at him for not having her on his halftime show this Super Bowl, because her career's, they think, has been blackballed by that incident, while Timberlake's is just kind of turned upward. You know, I might be interested if Justin did a duet with his wife. That would have been interesting. Jessica Biel, Timberlake. I don't know if she took his name or not. Let's see, where were we? Does anyone even remember that Nelly, Diddy, and Kid Rock also performed that night? And let's see, in 1996, we have Diana Ross. The halftime show went through some growing pains in the 90s, but Diana Ross' soulful performance at the Super Bowl was definitely a high point. Her dramatic exit via helicopter was a precursor for the larger-than-life moments that later performers would pick up. Paul McCartney in 2005, Sir Paul's show marked the beginning of the six-year classic rock era of halftime shows. Following the backlash from Janet Jackson's notorious wardrobe malfunction in 2004, and what a breath of fresh air it was. McCartney knew exactly what songs from his catalog would fill up a football stadium, starting with Drive My Car, pumping through with Live and Let Die, and finishing with the crowd pleaser Hey Jude. This show showed how sometimes the old ways are the best. And then at number 8, we have Katy Perry, 2015. This is a halftime show that we'll look back at as emblematic of its time. Katy's show was loud, weird, and specifically tailored to the internet's tendency to latch onto viral moments. and me the bejesus out of them. But in terms of actual musical performances, the real star was Missy Elliott, who strutted out in a surprise appearance and blew the crowd away. She didn't steal the spotlight, she commandeered it. At number 7, we have Prince, actually, who showed up at this year's Super Bowl via video on a screen, doing a little thing with Justin Timberlake, which was kind of neat as a tribute to Minnesota, he goes. But Prince's performance was in 2007 Super Bowl. Took place under a torrential Florida downpour, but that played right into Prince's hand. His performance of Purple Rain amid raindrops turned purple by stage lights was breathtaking, as was his take on Bob Dylan's All Along the Watchtower. And at number 6, we have Beyoncé. Boy, how could you go wrong with her? Of course she's on this list. It's Beyoncé, for crying out loud. She has a stage presence that is unrivaled by any musician of her generation. But what really made her show unique was just a surprise Destiny's Child reunion. It was also the fact that she actually paid respect to the event by starting her show with a soundbite from legendary football coach Vince Lombardi. And number 5, we have Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band, 2009. Wasn't that Super Bowl amazing? Not only did it have one of the most dramatic championship games ever between the Steelers and Cardinals, but it also had performance from The Boss. That was the apex of the classic rock era, from his order to put the chicken fingers down to his knee slide right into the camera. Springsteen was on a mission to get everyone out of their seats. Mission accomplished, sir. At number 4, we have Aerosmith and NSYNC. Okay. Some older readers might be annoyed that a show with Bye 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 and Britney Spears got ranked above one with Born to Run and 10th Avenue. Freeze out. But back in 2001, this lineup was a big deal. After struggling through the 90s, the NFL gave control of the halftime show to MTV, who responded by gathering the biggest top 40 heavyweights that could be found. The sight of Aerosmith performing Walk This Way with Spears, Nelly, Mary J. Blige, and the biggest boy band of all time, NSYNC, was kind of the show the NFL had been dreaming of for years. At number 3, we have Coldplay, Beyonce again, and Bruno Mars. Coldplay was the official act, but they turned their show into a tribute to all the halftimes that came before. Bruno returned with Uptown Funk under his belt, while Beyonce began her domination of 2016 with a tribute to the Black Panthers. Coldplay, meanwhile, turned out Viva La Vida, complete with a kid orchestra led by Maestro Gustavo Dudamel. And I probably butchered all those names, but you're getting this stuff for free. And a colorful crowd card stunt that showed up with people. How it's done. Number 2, Michael Jackson, 93. The one that started it all. MJ's reign as the king of pop was coming to an end at this time, and the beginning of his creepier reputation began later that year with the first wave of sexual abuse allegations, but he still had enough star power to make the halftime show a must-watch event for the first time ever. The Children's Choir, I wonder who picked the Children's Choir for that, performance of We Are the World, followed by Jackson's dramatic finale performance of Heal the World, became a defining moment of his career, one that would be reenacted 16 years later at his memorial service at the Staples Center. And number 1, we have U2. There will likely never be a halftime show bigger than this one, mounted just 4 months after 9/11. U2's show was a perfect mix of poignant remembrance, breathtaking musicianship, and a beautiful tribute. U2 performed Where the Streets Have No Name in front of a scrolling list of those who perished in the terror attack. To this day, the show still draws tears. And there you have it, folks. 25 of the halftime performances at the Super Bowl, and from worst to first. So, and we just did finish watching the game. What an ending. At least it wasn't a blowout. It was exciting till the very end. And I give the Eagles credit, even though Philly fans were kind of jerks to Minnesota fans who came there for that that game. But so they deserve it. They stripped the ball from Brady at the right time and kept him on the Hail Mary from completing it in the end zone. So, and I guess, you know, the halftime show, I mentioned that Prince was shown on a screen singing with Timberlake. And what would be interesting if Janet Jackson had come up there in a trench coat and open it up, and like, she get in a brawl with him, or if he did a little thing with his wife and they got into a fight on stage. I would have paid good money to have good seats to see that. Her family was upset that he didn't have her included in this. And in the story I read, he's kind of like, well, how often do I have to apologize for this? You know, I don't know if Janet Jackson feels like her career is tarnished forever from this, from that. And they're still blackballing her and stuff. But her family thinks so, I guess. So we will move on. And now for something completely different. With the Super Bowl over with, we now turn our hearts over to Valentine's Day. And I'll tell you why. I made some friends in my school days at the old SCSNU with Alexa and Zoe. And I haven't heard from them in a while. They're friends in my Facebook. But they notified me that they loved the show and wanted to contribute. So I said, well, what would you like to do? And they said, well, they would like to read from a dramatic novel by Harlequin called Romance After Sunset. I didn't realize these two women were friends, but I guess they are. And so we will play their dramatic reading, and I would like to thank them for their contributions to the show.
The rain's really coming down.
Yeah, but it's nice and cozy in here.
It's like a book reading day.
Yeah, it is. You should read.
Well, I have books.
Well, do you want to read together?
I mean, we could take turns reading out loud.
Like we did in school when we were like 8.
Well, yeah, but at least now we can read things we actually like.
Let me check out your bookshelf.
How about this one?
That book is super dirty.
Well, I like dirty. Unless I am very much mistaken, said the great detective, we are about to have a visitor, a woman of some standing in society who has just enjoyed a prolonged and vigorous bout of sexual congress. How on earth do you know that? I asked, amazed at his powers of prediction. He beckoned me over onto the drawing room window. Note the carriage standing at the curb outside the house, he said. It drew up 3/4 of an hour ago. Since then, no one had emerged. You will observe also that it is a private equipage, well-maintained, and with a discreet monogram on the door. The blinds are down, and it has been swaying rhythmically on its springs ever since it first arrived. In my experience, that is a sure sign that the occupants are engrossed in the noble sport of fucking. Had they been involved in a fight, the movements would not have been nearly so regular, and had the parties not been mutually eager for their encounter, the duration of their
good
activities
would have been considered. Good God, Holmes, I said. You continue to surprise me. Simple observation, he said. You are not, I take it, of all music disposition. The tempo of their movements, as far as I could judge by the bouncing of the carriage, moved from lento to andante, modulated to allegro, and then built up an exuberable to a thrilling ferrazzo, before subsiding once again by stages to lento. He fingered the strings of his violin as he spoke and gazed down into the street. Notice also the horse, he said. It became somewhat agitated while the bout was at its most animated. The coachman had to hold its head as it attempted to back between the shafts. Even now its nostrils are flared as it is tossing its mane. Animals frequently respond with great excitement in the presence of human intercourse. As he said this, the door was pushed fully open, and there entered an extremely handsome woman, dressed in the height of fashion. Her bosom, a delightfully full bosom, I could not fail to observe, rose and fell as though she was considerably out of breath. Her veil was flung back to reveal a pair of sparkling eyes with a fairway dreamy look in them. Her lips were parted and her skin deliciously flushed. As the door closed behind her, our visitor looked round in some state of agitation. Then her glance fell on me and she started backing away as though to leave the room. "And a glass for you?" I asked. "My pipe will suffice," he answered, reaching for the lady's lace boot on the mantel, in which I had learned he kept the unusual smoking mixture he preferred and which was provided for him by a villainous-looking lass.
She was absolutely absorbed in our joint venture. Throughout our whole fuck, she concentrated entirely on her pleasure and mine, without any sense of artifice or natural effort. She both responded to my needs and attended to her own. She was of that admirable school of thought that holds that fucking is an activity for two. There was no mindless surrender to her own desires at the expense of my own, nor was there any watchful deference to my will or possible demands, such as found in some of more professional ladies that I have encountered. So we fucked for a considerable time, locked together as one. Yet gradually the intensity of our activities increased. Each renewed level and tempo took us one step towards a final climax. From an easy canter, the pace was raised to a full yet sustainable gallop. I wondered at my own stamina. I was dimly aware that outside dusk must be falling as Holmes, but the thoughtful man's true patience continued with his own intellectual efforts. It allowed Miss Sawyers in the room to move softly about, lighting the gas and attending to the fire. Somewhere in the hallway, I was aware of a clock chiming. It was as though she widened, opening out to receive my libations as they jetted time and time again into her. She did not cry out, but moaned softly. Then suddenly, she caught her breath. She matched my every surge as though she also was discharging her cum into me. There was no sense of desperation, but rather a feeling of inevitability as tide met tide. So completely taken up was I by her climax that I swear the house could have burnt down without my noticing. Each jet felt now as though it must surely be the last, yet time and time again I felt one further eruption churning inside me. I was panting and shuddering as though I was emptying my entire being into her. Then, imperceptibly, the pace began to slacken. Amazingly, we did not stop. There was no final exhausted thrust, no sudden collapse. Smoothly but inevitably, we slowed, both breathing deeply, relaxing gently, still responding to each other. She turned her head to one side, a look of complete satisfaction and fulfillment spreading over her face. "Stay inside me," she said quietly. "I can still feel you." Then she hugged me to her, tucking her head into my shoulder. A last quiver of mixed emotion and cum flowed from me, and we held each other silently. 47 minutes, said Holmes, fishing out a half hunter from his waistcoat pocket. "A remarkable performance. I suggest a brandy when you have disentangled yourself." "I did not realize that we were being timed," I said, a little put out by his intentions. What are you doing?"
"Nothing, I'm listening."
You look like you're doing a little more than listening." Sorry, I was just fixing my panties.
I would play more of their dramatic reading, but it just gets a little noisy. I think they were having some technical difficulties, but I would like to thank Alexa and Zoe for their dramatic reading of Romance at Sunset. It goes well with the upcoming Valentine's Day. My next news item is, you could call it Living the Dream. It's from Wilmer, Minnesota, and a friend of mine passed it along on Facebook. It seems a 40-year-old man was injured Friday afternoon after attempting to jump a homemade rocket bike off his house roof in the 800 block of 3rd Street Southeast. According to the police report, the rocket bike consisted of a pair of skis, a bicycle frame, motorcycle exhaust pipe, and was being fueled with heat, an antifreeze product. The unidentified man fell approximately 13 feet and apparently hit a fence in the yard during the fall. When a rescue person arrived, he was on his back on a sled pushing himself around in the driveway with his feet. He was reportedly swearing and yelling about the pain, according to the report. Living the dream, buddy, living the dream. I think I'd be screaming too. Thank you, West Coast. The greatest laugh ever on television today, I must say. Well, I think I'm going to call Black Alert and spore drive this episode of Infotainment to the interwebs. I'd like to thank everyone who's listened to it. You can tweet my Twitters at Randy Podcaster. Email me at randyms12@gmail.com. My Facebook page and whatever else. Have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye.